trees, which are only occurring at Dover, only affect human-handled freight. And that is only 20% of the total arriving from or departing to the European continent, which means the vast majority of food, medicines and other supplies are coming and going as normal.
The British government is dealing with an escalating public health crisis, deepening economic upheaval and Brexit trade talks in Brussels simultaneously. Prime Minister Boris Johnson's handling of all three crises has come under fire and faith in the government is waning.
It's just got to a point where now people are just going to feel like their freedom is being restricted and their basic sort of human rights, and it's spending millions of pounds on an app that doesn't even work. So, I mean, yeah, making promises they can't adhere to. So I think, yeah, they've really shot themselves in the foot.
They're doing an okay job. I think obviously they could probably do better. But, you know, I think it's always easy when you're looking on the outside in, going, you know, we'd do this or that.
No more promises that we'll be over this by such and such a date, a day at a time now. I mean, it's a difficult situation for the government, but no more promises. We'll be over this by Christmas, Easter, a day at a time. It's debatable. Who would want to be in the government situation at the moment? It's changing by the day worldwide.
I think, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I would... urge people to think about, you know, what would they have done if they'd have been faced with everything that has happened, because I don't necessarily think that there's one right course of action. I don't necessarily think that our government have handled it the perfect way, but what is the perfect way kind of thing? And I don't think people have helped themselves by rebelling against the rules and all of that kind of thing. So
people are going to complain no matter what Boris Johnson says or does. So
the new strain of COVID-19 has already been detected in the Netherlands, Denmark, Belgium and Iceland. On the upside, the scientists are saying the new strain is not resistant to the vaccines now being approved and administered. More than 500,000 people have received the Pfizer jab in the UK, which was the first country to approve it, and Europe's medicine regulators have approved it as well, which means inoculations will be underway across the bloc in a matter of days. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has called for more details of the potential impact of the new coronavirus strain in the UK, which has led more than 40 countries to close their borders to Britain.
We've seen many variants emerge over the last number of months, and some have been successful, some have not been as successful as establishing themselves as part of the driving force of COVID. What no variant has done yet is establish itself as having any higher level of severity or evading our diagnostics or hiding from vaccines.
However, the chief executive at BioNTech, Ugur Sahin, has warned their vaccine may not be enough for the new strain.
We have now a new variant, the variant which was discovered in UK. And this variant is a little bit different. It has 9 mutations, not only a single mutation. And we don't know at the moment if our vaccine is also able to provide protection against this new variant.
More tests are underway to understand the new mutation. The heightened lockdown restrictions are expected to be in place until the new year. Let's unpack all of that with Ranjit Barar. He is an NHS consultant, a physician and surgeon, joining me now. It's good to have you with us, as always. So let's talk about the virus and then the cure. There have been, 17 mutations of the virus so far, according to one source. Why has this one caused so much alarm, and how concerned are you by it?
Sorry, good to be with you. In fact, there have been some 4,000 different mutations so far characterized. This is a relatively simple virus. There are only 17 genes within it, but each gene has a complex genetic code. If you imagine that the virus gets inside a patient, uses our own, it's not a fully fledged organism, it uses our own cellular apparatus to reproduce itself, and it does so billions of times every time it enters a single individual, and of course tens of millions of individuals, you know, human beings have caught this virus so far. So the ability for missense replication, so forth, for mutations of the virus are large. And actually, there have been, amongst all the different centers who are performing these extensive genotypes, of course, it was the Chinese first who realized this was a new disease, who published its genotype and shared it with the world. But then that's been replicated throughout many centres in many advanced countries throughout the world. And we've identified some 4,000 different types.
How concerned are you by it, Doctor?
Not hugely, to be honest. A large amount of claims are made by our own government about this particular strain being the reason for their new variation again in the lockdown. But really, to me, that was a matter of the ongoing failure of public health measures, the ongoing failure of our government to get to grips with the virus.
We'll get to the failures of the government soon, but let's talk about the cure too, this vaccine, question marks on its effectiveness. We heard the CEO of BioNTech, Ugur Sahin, saying in one breath that he was confident it was going to work against the virus, and then in another he said it was probably not enough.
There's an extent to which all of this is speculation. It's sufficiently new, this vaccine, though probably this virus, the mutation, though it's probably been known since September, but we don't know the absolute answer to the questions. It's very likely the vaccines will work against this strain. It's not hugely different. It's got 17 distinct point-based mutations, which don't radically change its structure or function, and still, as far as we can see, there's no difference in the virulence. We know that there's an increasing number of this a variation which are spreading throughout London, Kent, the south of England, and it's becoming even the dominant form of the COVID virus. But we've seen that before with the G614 mutation, which essentially has at this point become the pandemic. So
that
point
sure is reassuring, Ranjit. But let me go back to your point earlier about the government. What they have done is, well, they have been late twice to lock the country down or areas with high infection rates. At one point, do you think the media and this establishment will be held to account?
Well, I think we've seen the extent to which the media and the establishment are joined at the hip, that they really are functioning as a concerted whole. I thought your report was very balanced, but if you look at the reaction from the public, you know, really devoid of serious criticism, thinking that there's no perfect way to handle this, it shows the extent to which our public opinion is manipulated. They need only look as far as China. They need only look as far as Taiwan, really, to see that there is a way of actually eradicating the virus, and that was through public health measures that put the interests of the population first, not the interests of big business first. We've seen huge amounts of money go to the private sector, to cronies of the Tory government. We've seen actually very little targeted and effective action designed to support working people, isolate them, effectively support them when they have the virus, keep them separate from the general population, and in that way, limited spread. And it's that that's leading to the new lockdown, not really the emergence, in my mind, of a new strain.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Ranjit Brar, an NHS consultant, physician, and surgeon. Appreciate your time. Well, we're going to stay with the virus. Two Vatican cardinals who work closely with the Pope, Pope Francis, have tested positive for COVID-19. Polish Cardinal Konrad Karajewski, 57 years old, responsible for managing the Pontiff's charities, was hospitalized after contracting pneumonia through severe COVID-19. Italian Cardinal Giuseppe Bertallo, 78, the governor of Vatican City, is believed to be self-isolating in his own home. Italy, the first Western country hit by the virus, has seen nearly 70,000 COVID-19 fatalities since February, the highest toll in Europe. It has also registered some 1,097,000 cases to date. To other news, a German court has jailed a far-right gunman for life for a deadly attack on a synagogue in the eastern city of Halle last year. Stefan Baliet, 28, shot and killed a female passerby and a man at a store after failing to break into the synagogue. Prosecutors said the terrorist aimed to kill as many as possible of the more than 50 worshippers inside. During the five-month trial, Baliet said the attack was not a mistake and that those inside the synagogue were his enemies.
This is European News Bulletin broadcast by IRIB English Radio. In this program, we cover the most recent developments all over Europe. You can listen to this program on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
Russia has imposed a series of new sanctions on EU officials in retaliation for the punitive measures by the EU on Moscow over Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny. The Russian Foreign Ministry summoned German, French, and Swedish representatives in response to the EU's move just last month. 44-year-old Alexei Navalny was hospitalized after falling ill, you remember, on a domestic flight in Russia in August. His close aides and Western governments have claimed the Kremlin tried to kill him with poison. Moscow has denied all allegations of involvement. All good to go now. In this segment, the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has claimed those 8 Katyusha rockets that hit the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad Sunday came from, quote, Iran-backed militias. Let's see how that went down in Iran and on social media. Robert Carter is the man with that story. Robert, over to you.
Thanks, Saeed. So, yes, you've summed up the story very, very well. Obviously, this is just one of the many cases in which the U.S. has essentially blamed Iran for everything that's happening in the region against them. But, of course, they don't contextualize the fact that the U.S. is deeply despised by many factions within Iraq. So the fact that they've decided to blame Iran so quickly and without a proper investigation or any evidence to prove that Iran was at all involved in the incident is just typical of the Trump regime. Obviously, Iran has responded to this very aggressively. They've made very, very clear that they had no role in the incident, which you can see on screen now. That's, of course, the U.S. Green Zone in Baghdad, where the embassy is located, and they, of course, are trying to defend themselves from the projectiles. But let's play a snippet of a response from the Iranian Foreign Office spokesperson, who not only responded to the accusation, but sent his own warnings to the U.S. as well.
I completely and strongly condemn remarks by America's Secretary of State. I think that the Iraqi government will definitely find the perpetrators and those who ordered the attacks based on its duties. I also warn the United States regime not to seek starting a fire and waging conflict in these days.
And like you said, Robert, they have scapegoated Iran all these 4 years. How has social media reacted to this?
Well, I can bring you the reaction that's caused the upset. It's the tweet itself from the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and he says in the tweet that he blames Iran-backed militias once again for flagrantly and recklessly attacking U.S. Positions in Baghdad, wounding Iraqi civilians and so on. Now, obviously, let's bring the Iranian reaction. Again, tweeting this on social media is the Foreign Office spokesperson, who says, "We strongly refute the irresponsible anti-Iran accusations, which blatantly aim to create tensions. Iran rejects any attack on diplomatic missions." That's a key point. The U.S. military presence is the source of instability in the region. No amount of spin can divert blame for its evils. A very valid point mentioned there. The third tweet I've brought up is actually an earlier tweet from the Iranian Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, again addressing Mike Pompeo during one of his many anti-Iran tweets. He said earlier on that, Mike Pompeo, your own restrictions actually sanctioned U.S. companies out of Iran's markets with its unparalleled natural and human resources, and your illicit maximum failure policy cancelled Boeing's contracts for 88 million. So ultimately, the point here is that whatever Mike Pompeo's statement or position is on Iran, it's proven to have failed time and time again. So ultimately, going forward, these accusations, baseless accusations, are not going to win out or make any difference.
Maximum failure policy, that's quotable. Story two now. While some countries turn their backs on Palestinians and normalize ties with Israel, others are holding their ground, in this case, Pakistan.
Absolutely. So it's become apparent that the United Arab Emirates, which has already decided to throw its support and rub shoulders with the Israeli regime, totally backstabbing the Palestinian cause, has been reaching out to the Muslim majority country of Pakistan to try and encourage them to do the same. Pakistan has reiterated its position, saying that there is absolutely no chance that they will even consider normalizing ties with the Israeli regime until the Palestinian cause is settled one way or another. So ultimately, this is a reiteration of an earlier policy which was made clear weeks ago by Pakistan. But clearly, and this is the point, the pressure is still on. It's being applied by the US and its regional proxies to keep trying to convince Muslim countries to normalize ties, which is, of course, against what the wishes of the majority of Muslims in the Muslim world want. The majority of Muslims maintain pro-Palestinian positions, Saeed.
Right. I have drawn a blank, to be honest. I don't know if you have a soundbite or anything. If not, please bring us the online reaction to Pakistan's position.
Yes. So, of course, there has been a heated online reaction, as you can imagine, some interesting points raised. So let's bring up the first tweet and see what was said. It's from Khan here, who says that it's nice. It's a good positive stance from Pakistan after such a shameful UAE-led narrative. So many Arab countries are betraying Palestine, so a bit of praise there for some non-Arab Muslim powers which are maintaining their pro-Palestine positions. Let's go to the next tweet and see what was said. Again, another valid point, I believe, that was raised on social media. This is from Michael this time, who says, it's worth noting that post-Abraham Accords, Pakistani officials keep insisting again and again that Pakistan won't recognize Israel anytime soon, but none of their statements have ruled out engagements with Israel that fall short of recognition. So again, perhaps there are other avenues in which Pakistan will explore, but we have yet to see any evidence of that, Saeed. Let's go to the third and final tweet on this subject, which I can bring you now. It's actually highlighting a very interesting point, I think. It's saying that Pakistan has taken tough stances this year against Israel, the US, India, and indeed has a rift with Saudi Arabia going on as well. They are in need of friends, and this Twitter user seems to believe that they will turn more towards China, Turkey, and possibly Iran going forward. So let's wait and see how this regional dispute pans out.
Let's wait and see, as you say, Robert Carter, with those stories, Robert. And that story segues nicely into this other one. Two more stories we're going to bring you in this segment as well from what's been trending on social media. Days after the U.S. formally removed Sudan from its list of state sponsors of terrorism, the country's Congress has passed a bill restoring Khartoum's sovereignty immunity. Well, let's discuss that story with Ahmed Kabbalah, who joins me now to look at the fine print. Ahmed?
Hi, Saeed. Yes. So this was a sticking point in the negotiations. So although on the 14th of December, Saddam was formally lifted from the state sponsor of terror designation, it basically refused to fully accept normalization with Israel unless Congress passed this law which would protect it from future legal action from victims of Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden's terrorism. Now, the US was trying to claim that because Osama bin Laden lived in Sudan from 1991 to 1996, that the crimes of Osama bin Laden thereafter are somehow a responsibility of Sudan. Now, Sudanese people and supporters of Sudan have said, well, before 1991, in 1989, the US was backing Osama bin Laden, supporting him, financing him in the Afghan war against the Soviets. So if Sudan's responsible for the crimes of Osama bin Laden, then so is the US responsible for the crimes of bin Laden. Now, we accepted paying $335 million of compensation, but we did not want to be in endless litigation for crimes that have nothing to do with the Sudanese people.
And Ahmed, the timing of it all is also important. The offer for normalization also came at a time when Sudan is in economic turmoil. Its currency has lost 50% of its value. Bring us what the online opinion has been on this latest development.
Yes, so the first tweet says, you've given Sudan immunity for future lawsuits by the victims of the 1998 American embassy bombings in East Africa and provided Sudan with close to $1 billion in U.S. financial aid and loans. That's not an agreement. That's a short-term bribe. And they're right. the way that they agreed, they pushed Sudan to normalize relations with Israel was a combination of the carrot and the stick. The stick was, if you don't do this, the economy will free fall, there'll be economic ruin, and if you do this, we'll give you financial aid, financial loans, and we'll open up
valid
markets.
Point, Ahmed. Can you bring us the other tweet as well, since we're fast running out of time? Thank you.
Yeah, final choice, Sudan to secure win in Congress tonight, partial immunity and millions in assistance and debt relief, turns a page on Omar Bashir's days and clears path for Israeli normalization. And it actually links to our next story, because it was passed in a bunch of bills in Congress along with the stimulus package, and many Americans are angry that Sudan has been given $700 million, Israel has been given $500 million, yet American citizens are only given $600 one-off payment in their latest stimulus package. And Nancy Pelosi, who is the Speaker of the House, we've got this VT in which she's announcing this stimulus package.
We also have in the legislation direct payments, which are not in the Republican bill, to America's working families. I would like them been bigger, but they are significant, and they will be going out soon.
What was it in that soundbite that has caused so much outrage, Ahmed?
Yes, some people are angry that she said it would be significant. Now, she's worth over $180 million. Her refrigerator is apparently worth $25,000. She eats gourmet ice cream, yet she's saying a one-off payment at $600 is significant. Now, we've got a tweet that says, something to think about. Domino's is giving their employees $1,200 bonus, but our government is only giving us $600. How does that work? Now, Domino's is a fast food restaurant chain. They're giving $1,200 bonus to their employees because they've been doing so well. Yet the US government can only afford $600. Final tweet from Alan McLeod says, there's only $600 for you in this corona relief bill, but there's $33 million to overthrow the Venezuelan government. Now, within this bill, there's $34 million in democracy promotion in Venezuela, which is basically pseudo language for regime change operations.
Right, someone has been doing the math, Ahmed. First it was Ahmed Caballo with those stories, Ahmed. Thank you. And that's all the time we have for this broadcast.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now, all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of Al-Baqir was given to the Imam, which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam Al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and I'm invited by Brother Mahdi to this segment of the program. Today, I'd like to read to you a passage about Islamic lifestyle according to Imam Muhammad. Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. This passage is extracted from a book titled The Life of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, written by the great Iraqi Muslim historian and scholar Allama Baqir Sharif al-Qurashi. This great Muslim scholar and historian was born in 1344 AH in the city of Najaf. He's well known for his books on the biography and conduct of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Please stay with me. Among the high morals of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam was that he glorified the poor and raised their position lest the people should see the abasement of the need on them. The historian said, he ordered his family not to say to the beggar, "Beggar, take this." Rather, he ordered them to say, "Servant of Allah, you are blessed." He also ordered them to call the beggars with their best names. Surely, they are the morals of the Prophet who came to make man high, to supply him with glory and dignity, and to save him from submission and abasement.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. Now you're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. We find in the historical text a very interesting and long conversation between Jabir bin Yazid al-Jawfi, who is one of the more knowledgeable students of Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, and who also happens to be one of the faithful companions of the fifth divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam. Of course, this conversation is very long between this student of the Imam and the Imam himself, but we have decided to take bits and pieces out and discuss them. What is really beautiful, dear listeners, is that even though these are one or two sentences, we can have a whole long program on each of these sentences in this conversation. So Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam says to Jabir bin Yazid al-Jawfi, when talking about high moral standards and ideals, which was asked of him, Imam al-Baqir says, "Seek the continuity of glory through deadening greediness. Push away the abasement, the humiliation of greediness through the glory of despair. And bring the honor of despair through the aspiration to do good." So here, dear friends, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, peace be upon him, is saying to Jabir bin Yazid al-Jawfi in this conversation that in order to have a continuous glory, continuous honor, continuous glory again, this is attained by stopping greediness, this unending desire and want to have more and more and more, especially when talking about the materialistic world. Finish greediness and it will give you glory. And again, he says that greediness, this unending want and desire of the materialistic world, is humiliation. And how do you get rid of this humiliation which is caused by greediness? Well, by despair. Now, this is to despair not of the might and the mercy and the forgiveness of Allah, but rather it is to despair of this mirage, this fake and glamorous thing called the materialistic world. despair of the materialistic world, meaning do not put your hopes in this materialistic world, do not make your joys this materialistic world. And finally, Imam al-Baqir says to Jabir bin Yazid al-Jufi in this conversation, bring the honor of this despair of the materialistic world by aspiring to do good deeds. Very beautiful words in this dialogue between Jabir bin Yazid al-Jufi and Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I am Atar, the host of the program Dialogue. Now, this moment, I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Ayyub Rashid. I hope you enjoy this part and stay tuned till the end of today's program.
Now, when we look at Imam alayhi salam, we understand the hadith of Jabir bin Abdullah al-Ansari, when the Holy Prophet said, Ya Jabir, you will live longer, you will see him convey my salam. So Jabir bin Abdullah al-Ansari says, I was waiting for that moment. One narration says Jabir became blind. He couldn't see at the time when Imam al-Baqir was a young man. But he says, one day I was standing near a particular alleyway and I heard someone walking. The footsteps reminded me about the footsteps of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. So Jabir asked him, who are you? And he said, I'm Muhammad. Who is your father? He mentioned the name of Imam Sajjad. He continued until he mentioned that he was the grandson of Rasulullah. So the way the meeting went, Jabir hugged him and he was crying and he said, this is your salam from Rasulullah. He gave it to me. What we learn from here is that Jabir was blessed to see Rasulullah, to see Imam Amirul Mu'minin, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, Imam Zainul Abidin, and then Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. As you can imagine, he was so blessed. But one important lesson we are learning from this particular anecdote is that when you are given salam, make sure you deliver it. Jabir was waiting to deliver that salam. How many times we travel, someone says, oh, okay, you're going to Mombasa, please say salam to them. Inshallah, I'll say salam. And you reach there, well, you forget all the salam. Jabir is telling us, no, you have to make sure. If you say, I will deliver the salam, make sure you deliver it. Because imagine Jabir, for how long he was waiting to meet with Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
About you, IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Recently, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced new restrictions because of the new coronavirus strain. Several European Union countries and Canada were banning or limiting some flights from the UK to try to limit any spread. Health experts in the UK and US said the strain seems to infect more easily than others, but there is no evidence yet it is more deadly. Patrick Vallance, the British government's chief scientific advisor, said that the strain moves fast and is becoming the dominant variant, causing over 60% of infections in London by December. The strain is also concerning because it has so many mutations, nearly 24, and some are on the spiky protein that the virus uses to attach to and infect cells. That spike is what current vaccines target. Dr. Razi Gupta, who studies viruses at the University of Cambridge in England, said, "I'm worried about this for sure, but it's too soon to know how important it ultimately will prove to be." He and other researchers posted a report of it on a website scientists use to quickly share developments, but the paper has not been formally reviewed or published in a journal. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article authored by the staff writer of the Associated Press News Agency under the heading, "Are New Coronavirus Strains Cause for Concern?" Please stay with us to hear more about the issue. Reports from Britain and South Africa of new coronavirus strains that seem to spread more easily are causing alarm, but virus experts said it's unclear if that's the case or whether they pose any concern for vaccines or cause more severe disease. Viruses naturally evolve as they move through the population, some more than others. It's one reason we need a fresh flu shot each year. New variants or strains of the virus that causes COVID-19 have been seen almost since it was first detected in China nearly a year ago. Recently, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced new restrictions because of the new strain. Several European Union countries and Canada were banning or limiting some flights from the UK to try to limit any spread. Here's what is known about the situation. Health experts in the UK and US said the strain seems to infect more easily than others, but there is no evidence yet it is more deadly. Patrick Vallance, the British government's chief scientific advisor, said that the strain moves fast and is becoming the dominant variant, causing over 60% of infections in London by December. The strain is also concerning because it has so many mutations, nearly 24, and some are on the spiky protein that the virus uses to attach to and infect cells. That spike is what current vaccines target. Dr. Razi Gupta, who studies viruses at the University of Cambridge in England, said, "I'm worried about this, for sure, but it's too soon to know how important it ultimately will prove to be. He and other researchers posted a report of it on a website scientists used to quickly share developments, but the paper has not been formally reviewed or published in a journal. Viruses often acquire small changes of a letter or two in their genetic alphabet just through normal evolution. A slightly modified strain can become the most common one in a country or region just because that's the strain that first took hold there, or because super spreader events helped it to become entrenched. A bigger worry is when a virus mutates by changing the proteins on its surface to help it escape from drugs or the immune system. Trevor Bedford, a biologist and genetic expert at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, wrote on Twitter, "Emerging evidence suggests that may be starting to happen with the new coronavirus, adding, we've now seen the emergence and spread of several variants that suggest this, and some show resistance to antibody treatments." Dr. Gupta said in April, researchers in Sweden found a virus with two genetic changes that seemed to make it roughly two times more infectious. He said about 6,000 cases worldwide have been reported, mostly in Denmark and England. Several variations of that strain now have turned up. Some were reported in people who got them from mink farms in Denmark. A new South African strain has the two changes seen before, plus some others. Gupta said the one in the UK has the two changes and more, including eight to the spike the protein. It's called a variant under investigation because its significance is not yet known. World Health Organization official recently said the strain was identified in southeastern England in September and has been circulating in the area ever since. Will people who had COVID-19 from an old strain be able to get the new one? Will it undermine vaccines? Former U.S. Food and Drug Commissioner Scott Gottlieb said on CBS, "Face the Nation, probably not." Gupta agreed, "Unlikely." U.S. President-elect Joe Biden's Surgeon General nominee Vivek Murthy said on NBC's Meet the Press that there is no reason to believe that the vaccines that have been developed will not be effective against this virus as well. Several experts noted vaccines produce wide-ranging responses by the immune system beyond just those to the spike protein. Dr. Manoj Saloy, the chief science advisor for the U.S. government vaccine distribution effort, said on CNN's State of the Union, "The possibility that new strains will be resistant to existing vaccines are low, but not inexistent." Bedford agreed, "Up to now, I don't think there has been a single variant that would be resistant." He said, "I think this particular variant in the UK is very unlikely to have escaped the vaccine immunity." Bedford wrote on Twitter, "I'm not concerned because a lot of changes in the genetic code would probably be needed to undermine a vaccine, not just one or two mutations." But he wrote, "Vaccines may need fine-tuned over time as changes accumulate, and changes should be more closely monitored." Murthy said the new strain doesn't change the public health advice to wear masks, wash hands, and maintain social distancing. more and more European countries are suspending flights to the UK as the new strain of coronavirus takes hold in London and Southeast England. Belgium and the Netherlands were the first to suspend all flights, with the former all banning train travel to the UK. They were joined by Austria and Italy, which have now also banned flights to and from the UK. Meanwhile, Germany is also understood to be considering similar action, with the German government official telling the DPA news agency that restrictions on flights from Britain are a serious option. Furthermore, the French news channel BFM TV has reported that France, too, is seriously considering suspending flights and trains from the UK, and so that and the French are looking for European coordination. The rush by European countries to suspend flights from the UK comes in the wake of Boris Johnson's introduction of a tier 4 level of COVID-19 restrictions for the capital city London and the southeast of England region. The latest measures are set to cover the Christmas celebrations period and will apply until at least the beginning of 2021. According to the top British health officials, the new variant of coronavirus is not necessarily more deadly, but it is proving to be up to 70% more transmissible. The tier 4 measures in the southeast will apply for an initial two-week period, with a review due on December 30. The crisis spurred by the new virus strain is compounded by the prospect of a no-trade deal Brexit, thus presenting the British government with a perfect storm of major problems. To that end, Prime Minister Boris Johnson chaired a meeting of the government's Emergency Committee, COBRA, later on Monday, December 21st, in order to contain the crisis.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, frauds and cheaters. Muslim society is based on purity of feeling, love, sincerity towards every Muslim, and fulfillment of promises to every member of society. Its members are endowed with piety, truthfulness, and faithfulness. Cheating and deception are alien characters in contrast to the noble character of a true Muslim. There is no room in it for swindlers, double-crossers, trickers, and, traitors, for instance. Islam views cheating and deception as heinous sins, a source of shame to the one guilty of committing them, both in this world and the next. The Prophet, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him, may the mercy and blessings of Allah be upon our beloved Prophet, did not merely denounce them, by excluding them from the Muslim community in this world, he also announced that on the day of judgment, every traitor would be raised carrying the flag of his betrayal. And you know that on the day of judgment, there will be some people who will be humiliated, who will be insulted, and who will be disgusted. But they wouldn't have a choice at that point, because that's not where you rectify your actions. You have a chance and you have the opportunity to rectify your actions in this world. If one fails to do that, then on the day of judgment, only the rules of Allah are going to prevail, and based on those rules, this person will be humiliated and disgusted and insulted in front of everyone. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing frauds and cheaters. The shame of traitors, men and women, will be immense on the day of judgment. Those who thought that their betrayal had been forgotten will find it right there, exposed for the whole world to see on the banners raised high, held by their own hands. Just imagine the day of judgment. Who would like to be embarrassed there? In front of everyone, there will be no veil, there will be no hiding of it. It's not an option, it's not possible. So somebody who was a cheat in this world, who was deceiving others in this world, it is very much possible that this person gets off the hook in this world. Nobody notices it, you know, he played it really smart, and you know, he just was not caught. But on the day of judgment, the scenario is going to be different. The scenery is going to be different. This person will be exposed right in front of every single individual. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that God said, "There are three whom I oppose on the day of resurrection: a man who gave his word and then betrayed it, a man who sold a free man into slavery and kept the money, and a man who hired someone, benefited from his labor, then did not pay his wages." These are the three types that the Prophet said he is going to oppose, actively oppose, on the day of resurrection and on the day of judgment. So let's pray to Allah that we are not in one of these three categories. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.